This episode of the Sportsman's Nation is brought to you by Outdoor Edge and their complete lineup of replaceable blade knives, fixed blade knives, and game processing kits. Now, we've all been there before, trying to field dress your wild game with a dull knife. This is where Outdoor Edge really steps in. With the Razor Safe system, you can have a brand new razor sharp blade with just the push of a button. No more dull blades and no more problems processing your wild game. To check out all of the products from Outdoor Edge, visit OutdoorEdge.com. And at checkout, enter the discount code NATION30. That's NATION30 for 30% off of your purchase.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Ohio Huntsman Podcast. And today we're talking about ticks. Everybody's favorite insect to hate, I guess, as well as other biting insects, but primarily ticks. So if you've listened to some of the episodes in the past, you know that I like to get into the weeds and do research on things. And so I did just that on how to prevent ticks, keep ticks off of you, as well as like the potential side effects of the chemicals you'll be using to do that. So, right, you've heard us talk, we have families, we have young kids. Are these things safe to be spraying on your kids, on your skin, just on your clothes, breathing them in, that sort of thing? So Jeff and I sit down and talk through what I was able to find in my research on tick prevention. Before we get into that, though, I want to talk about our sponsor, Mastin's Deer Sense. So Mastin's has everything you need from a scent standpoint for deer hunting and also predator hunting. So they've got your traditional liquid scents. That's great. Their scents are really pure. They actually collect their scent on stainless steel. A lot of other companies collect on concrete, and you know, concrete can, it's porous, right? So it can absorb other off scents, off flavors, if you will. So Mastin's collects on stainless steel, keeps the scent pure. It's a high quality liquid scent. They've also got their scented candles that you can use in their double scent stacker. They've got scented gel crystals. They've got scent drippers. So anything you need, check them out. Go to mastinsdeerscents.com, see what they have to offer, and you can order right on their site, and they'll ship it right to your house. Now let's get into our conversation on ticks. Welcome to the Ohio Huntsman Podcast, where three brothers, Jason, Jacob, and Jeff, discuss all things hunting in Ohio. Our goal is to be your source for accurate and reliable hunting news and conservation issues in the great state of Ohio, as well as some fun and interesting conversations along the way. This is the Ohio Huntsman Podcast.
Are you listening?
All right, so today on the show, we're going to talk about tick prevention. I guess also other biting insects like mosquitoes, but you know, kind of the main topic is ticks. That seems to be coming more and more prevalent. My father-in-law actually works for the county road crew, and he talks a lot about how, you know, as the years go by, he comes home with more and more ticks. Never, you know, he's worked there for a lot of years. Never used to have ticks. Now, you know, just the other day I was over there picking Ella up, and he said he had three ticks on him in that one day. And they're on the roads, right? So it's not like they're doing a ton of, I mean, they got the ditches and stuff, right? But it's not like he's stomping through the backwoods, you know, the backcountry or something like that, you know? So he's picking them up on roadsides and road ditches pretty frequently. Like I said, never used to have that. I don't know, Jeff, do you ever remember as kids worrying about ticks around here?
No, I don't think I ever had a tick on me until I was an adult. You know, I was probably the first 20 years of my life, I don't think I ever got a tick.
Right. Yeah, same and, here.
I mean, even now, I think we treated the dog, but I don't remember the dog getting that many ticks. You know, maybe, you know, one or two maybe throughout my childhood.
Right.
You know, and the cat, you know, we had an outside garage cat and we didn't treat that thing with anything and it never got ticks.
Yeah, and the dog, I don't remember specifically, but I wouldn't surprise me if the reason we treated the dog for ticks is because it was in the flea medication, you know, flea and tick medication. You know, it was more like we wanted to keep the fleas out of the house or, you know, that kind of thing versus keep ticks off the dog.
Right.
But so as the, you know, as this becomes more and more of a thing, it's certainly something to be concerned about with, you know, Lyme disease and some of the other tick-borne illnesses that, I mean, they can have lifelong lasting impacts if you get, you know, get bit by the wrong tick, I guess. And the other thing to, you know, that I'm taking into consideration now is kids and keeping ticks off kids. You know, me, it's like, I don't, you know, whatever. I'll spray whatever, you know, is I'm less concerned about it. Kids are smaller. They're, you know, potentially more susceptible to the chemicals and things. And so there's some concern from my standpoint on that type of thing. So what should I be using on me? What is, you know, safe to use on kids? At what levels? All of that. So I went down the rabbit hole, if you will, and started doing some homework. And I guess, you know, the plan is to kind of share what I found, what I've dug up. You know, I'm going to try to include where I found the information, you know, as we go. And my, you know, my goal isn't to give a recommendation on here's what you should do, but just sort of present the information and let, you know, you all, Jeff, Jake, listeners, make a decision, you know, what you think is best for you and your situation. Because I don't think there is a one-size-fits-all answer to this. It depends on lots of factors. So, okay, so basically, you got two different categories. You've got insecticides and you've got repellents. The most common tick insecticide that I'm aware of is permethrin. I think a lot of people know permethrin at this point. They're, you know, you got name brand products by Sawyer. You know, you'll see the yellow bottles. That's permethrin, and it's an insecticide. Works great for keeping ticks off. There does seem to be some health concerns with it. And maybe not so much, I don't know if keeping ticks off is the correct word, but I mean, it's an insecticide. It kills ticks. So this is, I guess, the concentration that you use it in for human use, because you can use it on livestock and other things. It can be used for other applications, but for using on, you know, people, is a 0.5% concentration. And I guess I'll start by saying you use permethrin to treat your clothing and your equipment. You do not spray it on your skin like a repellent you would. And that's right.
That was going to be my question.
Yeah. You treat your clothes.
Can you also use permethrin to like treat an area? Like, you know, could you treat your yard with it?
I believe so, yes.
Okay.
I think you can use it probably in higher concentrations, but I do think you can treat your yard. Some of the information, I was just looking at some of the information I got. This is from the National Pesticide Information Center. It says permethrin is an insecticide In the pyrethroid family, pyrethroids are synthetic chemicals that act like natural extracts from the chrysanthemum flower. Permethrin is used in a number of ways to control insects. Products containing permethrin may be used in public health mosquito control programs. They may be used on food and feed crops, on ornamental lawns, on livestock and pets, in structures and buildings, and on clothing. It may also be used in places where food is handled, such as restaurants. It was first registered with the US EPA in 1979 and was re-registered in 2006. So there's a handful of ways that permethrin is used. Typically, outdoors people are using it on their clothes. So tick gets on you, it gets a dose of the permethrin and kills the tick. So basically, works good, but the downfall is you can't put or you shouldn't put it on your skin. I mean, the bottle talks about when you buy this stuff, it talks about wearing gloves when you apply it. Again, some more information from this pesticide information center. When people get permethrin on their skin, they may have irritation or tingling, burning and itching at the spot. If permethrin gets in the eyes, it can cause redness, pain, or burning. If people eat permethrin, it could cause sore throat, abdominal pain, nausea, and vomiting. People that have breathed in permethrin have had irritation in the nose and lungs, difficulty breathing, headaches, dizziness, nausea, and vomiting. It doesn't say in what amounts. Just those are some of the potential side effects. They go on to say that permethrin was classified by the International Agency for Research on Cancer, or IARC, I guess would be the acronym for that. It was classified by them as, quote, not classifiable as to its carcinogenicity in humans in 1991. This means that the IARC could not decide whether or not permethrin can cause cancer, but the US EPA decided that permethrin was likely to be a carcinogenic to humans if it was eaten. This decision was based on the structure of permethrin, what happens to it in the body, laboratory tests that cause tumors in mice, and evidence of tumors in rats. So take that for what it's worth. I guess what I take from that is it's not harmless, right? There's some precautions that you need to take when using it. If used appropriately and in the right concentrations, I think it's relatively safe. But, you know, you read some of that and you're like, man, do I really want to be spraying that on my kids' clothes?
Right.
Right. The other thing is, like, for me, you know, or I guess an outdoorsman, you've got like your kit, your gear, right? Your turkey hunting vest and jacket and pants, right? So, you know, I can treat a handful of things and be relatively protected when I go in the woods. Kids, you know, they're going to go out in the yard, go out back, whatever, you know, like, at least in my situation, you know, it's not like Ella has okay, these are your outside pants. And the, you know, it's like, she just goes and plays, right? We take her to the cabin. She, you know, we have play clothes, but she's got a lot of play clothes. So what am I going to treat every piece of clothing she has? You know, it's not practical, I guess, for that application, aside from the potential health risks. Mm-hmm. Other things to point out with permethrin is it's not a one and done. So a single application of permethrin lasts 6 weeks or 6 washings. That's from the Sawyer website. They sell permethrin-based tick products, tick prevention products. It's applied, I already mentioned this, it's applied to clothing and gear as opposed to applying to the skin like most bug repellents. And I thought this was interesting, again, just as another point to potential health implications. The CDC recommends washing permethrin-treated clothing separately from other clothing. They don't say why. That was in a short little video that they had done on, you know, safe use of permethrin to prevent ticks. But just another sort of data point on, you know, if it was perfectly harmless, why would it matter, right?
Right, right. Doesn't sound like it's something that you really want long-term exposure to, even on your clothes.
Yeah, so they...
You know, if you're someone who's working in the field, you know, all yeah. day, every day.
So they, this insecticide or pesticide information center, the National Pesticide Information Center, they have like a, it's actually kind of helpful. It's like a fact sheet on all the different in pesticides and things like that. But for permethrin, there's a question on here. Has anyone studied non-cancer effects for long-term exposure to permethrin? So again, you know, what does this all mean? Hard to say, but it says researchers fed dog and mice permethrin for up to 2 years and found that their livers increased in weight. The dogs fed with permethrin had more tremors than dogs that did not eat it. Rabbits that had permethrin on their skin for 21 days had skin irritation, but no other signs of toxicity. Researchers are not sure whether long-term exposure to permethrin can affect the body's hormone system. I thought this was interesting. A group of women used a product containing 4% permethrin over their entire bodies to treat a scabies problem during pregnancy. So 4% is higher than the 0.5% that like the Sawyer products or I think most any of the commercially available, you know, tick prevention products are. So 4% to treat scabies. During pregnancy, another group of pregnant women used a product containing 1% permethrin to treat head lice. Exposure to permethrin did not affect the pregnancies of any of the women in either group. They don't say how many, you know, how many women were involved in that. There's no, you know, additional data, but just another data point, I guess. Rats right. that were fed permethrin. And, well, go ahead.
Yeah, and it just kind of shows that, you know, it's relatively safe for pregnant women, you know, to use on their clothing, if you yeah. will. I mean, basically, pregnant women have used it for, you know, in much higher dosage and actually applying it to their body. Right. There's not much risk there, you know, added risk.
Yeah. And so they go on to talk about rabbit studies that were fed, you know, I mean, they're feeding permethrin to, or I said rabbits, I meant rats, rat studies, offspring weighed less. Some of their offspring developed extra ribs more often than control rats. You know, so who knows, but I guess just more data that use it with care, weigh the pros and cons of, you know, if you're in a heavy tick area, that's why I said at the beginning, like there's no one size fits all answer to this, right? There's pros and cons to each. You got different tick infestation levels in your areas and, you know, what are your likelihood of being exposed to ticks? What's your likelihood of being exposed to ticks that are likely to carry Lyme disease? You know, it's a spectrum. Any questions on permethrin, Jeff, before we move on to the like the repellent type products?
I don't think so. No, I mean, I think you did a pretty good job at explaining permethrin. Is there other insecticides that are used, or is permethrin basically it?
I think for people applications, permethrin's kind of the one. I do think there are other see, and I don't know what this stuff is. When we first moved into our new house, I think it was the first summer, we had ticks pretty bad in the, you know, in the back overgrown area and stuff. Ella would come in with ticks on her pretty frequently. And so we called a service and they came out and sprayed. And on the invoice, they used a product called Demand CS and treated the yard with that stuff. Whether that's a permethrin-based product, I don't know. but I'm not aware, I guess I'm not aware of any other commonly available insecticide type products other than permethrin.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough.
So if we move into the repellent category, basically what I found, I'm going to kind of limit it to, well, not kind of, I am going to limit it to Picaridin, DEET, and IR3535. There's, I think, one other one that maybe shows some potential, but I don't know. I couldn't find as much information on that, and so I chose to skip it. But I guess let's start with DEET, because everybody's familiar with DEET. So DEET,
right.
I guess.
Yeah, DEET's like the known mosquito repellent, bug repellent, you know. Right. Everybody, yeah. I, you know, that's basically the repellent, you know.
Right.
When you go to the store and buy bug repellent, it's how much DEET does it have in it?
Right. Yeah. And there's also this, like, you know, you hear this just sort of grumblings or, you know, like, should you be using DEET? Is it safe? Should you be spraying it on your kids? You know, like, is DEET safe? So I dug into that. A lot of this information here is coming from the Environmental Working Group, which they are pretty strict when it comes to, like, products that you're putting on yourself as far as, you know, what's safe, what's not. Like,
uh-huh.
I could almost guarantee if you go on, because they've got a, I think they call it their Skin Deep database, where they've got, like, they give products a score based on the chemicals used in them. So they've got, like, all kinds of skincare, hair care, skincare, you know, shampoos, conditioners, lotions, sunscreens, all that stuff. Like, unless you are intentionally buying something special, this place, you know, I think they rank things on a scale of, like, 1 to 10, 1 being uh-huh. safe, 10 being not less safe. and I'd be willing to bet that, you know, if you just go to Walmart, whatever, and buy shampoo or sunscreen, like, they're ranking that at a, I'd say probably a 5 or higher as far as, like, they're concerned about it. Basically anything that's got, like, a fragrance in it, like, they fragrances, they're real.
This is out of 10?
Yes.
Okay.
So anything that's got a and so the way their skincare, I guess, thing works is they look at all the ingredients. They give each ingredient a score, and then they somehow tally that up and give the entire product a score. So anytime I've looked at it, you know, like, the fragrance ingredient that's in there, that's a 10, 10 bad. Some of the other stuff, you know, is like, whatever, if it's got water in it, water's, you know, a 1, it's safe, you know, but, you know, so they tally that up somehow and give the product a score.
Uh-huh.
So,
well, that's interesting. So 10's as high as the scale goes?
Yes.
I mean, because, yeah, that's interesting that they, you know, use the highest the scale goes. You know, because, I mean, there's stuff that you could be putting on your skin that's, like, you know, a known carcinogen. You know,
yeah.
The one I think of is hydraulic fluid. Mm. You know, like, hydraulic fluid is supposed to be really bad to be getting on your skin, you know, like, at least one that I know about, but, you know, people get it on their skin all the time.
Yeah.
You know, don't get cancer. So I guess it's interesting that they're using the top of their scale when on products that, you know, are seen as, you know, that there's an ingredient in there that is seen as being, you know, that dangerous, I guess, when there's got to be things that are more dangerous.
Right. Yeah. So
that's interesting. You know, it gives you no room to go up.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, all right.
But,
so fives are about what every normal product from Walmart is.
Well, fives are higher. So like, here's I just pulled their CVS Health Clear Sunscreen Spray SPF 50. They're ranking that an 8.
An 8.
So,
uh-huh.
Yeah. Oh, so okay. part of that, it seems like caution. Based on EWG's modeling, the UV protection is significantly lower than the SPF value would indicate. Sprays pose an inhalation risk and may not cover the skin completely. The fragrance in there is that ingredient. They're considering that an 8 due to potential for allergies and immunotoxicity, endocrine disruption, non-reproductive organ system toxicity, ectotoxicology, irritation for skin, eyes, or lungs. So I guess I say this to sort of
right.
Preface
basically
the information.
It's not really bad unless it's, you know, an 8 or or higher. If it's below that, probably right. Not too terrible.
Right. Well, and I say that to like, these people are pretty stringent on like their recommendations on, you know, what they consider safe and not. And so they actually recommend DEET as a safe option for both adults and children. Now, they do recommend DEET in different concentrations for adults versus children. But, you know, I guess I'll go into some of the information I pulled from their site. So,
yeah, because I'm really interested to hear this, because
yeah.
I definitely abuse DEET, so I'm interested to see how safe it is.
Yeah, so they say DEET, registered for public use in 1957, is the most common mosquito and tick repellent. It's rated as very effective in repelling a wide range of mosquitoes, ticks, and other bugs. DEET has been used billions of times and is a reasonable, if imperfect, choice. When used as directed, DEET is considered safe by many public health organizations, including the EPA, the CDC, the American Academy of Pediatrics, and the WHO. So then we get into some of the research that they cited. In 1998, the EPA reviewed the first 40 years of public usage of DEET, along with its known toxicity information, and concluded that, quote, the normal use of DEET does not present a health concern to the general U.S. population, end quote. And the agency found, quote, no toxicologically significant effects in animal studies, end quote. So then they go on to say, when EWG, which again is Environmental Working Group, started our research, we were particularly concerned about the potential downsides of DEET. We urge customers to handle DEET with caution. It is known to irritate the eyes and in intense doses may induce neurological damage. In very rare cases, DEET has been reported to impair the nervous system with symptoms including seizures, tremors, and slurred speech. This most often occurs after exposure to high concentrations of the chemical. In addition, DEET gives off a distinct odor and can damage plastic, rubber, and vinyl on clothing, backpacks, glasses, watches, and cameras. Then they go on to talk about, you know, what they're sort of, I guess, considering safe, you know, because you can buy all different varying concentrations of DEET. Whereas, like I said, permethrin, I think the only thing you can really buy for that is pre-mixed for people use is that 0.5% concentration. Now you can go to the feed supplies, you know, Tractor Supply, Rural King, whatever, and buy permethrin that is intended for livestock in higher concentrations, like 10% DEET or permethrin. And, you know, there are people that buy that stuff and then just dilute it themselves down to that 0.5% concentration, you know, do that at your own risk, I guess, is what I'll say. But DEET, you know, you can buy DEET 10%, you can buy DEET 100%. So lots of different ranges of products. So they say the EPA allows sales of repellents with up to 100% DEET, but increasing concentration does not increase efficacy. Longer protection times can be achieved by time-released products, and the EWG is saying they think it makes sense to follow the Canadian government recommendations limiting DEET to 30% in any product and using even weaker concentrations for young children. The Canadian government's advice is more conservative than the CDC's 2016 recommendation to use a product containing 20 to 50% DEET for adult protection against Lyme disease, and a product containing 20 to 30% DEET for children's protection. And they go on to say consumers must make their own decisions about which advice to follow mm-hmm. when it comes to using DEET on children in areas with high risk of Lyme disease.
Right. So did they say that increasing the percentage of DEET doesn't increase its effectiveness?
Correct.
Really?
So they say, another statement I pulled out, contrary to popular belief, bug repellents with higher concentrations, such as old school 100% DEET, are not necessarily more effective and may even be harmful. To avoid that risk, the EWG recommends steering clear of DEET products with concentrations over 30%. So in the reading I was doing, once you get up past the 30% range, the only thing you're really increasing is the time that it remains effective.
So interesting.
Let's say a 50% DEET remains effective longer than a 30% DEET.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, to sum that up, as far as EWG's yeah. stance is, adults, they say you should be using a DEET product with 20 to 30% concentration. Children, 10% concentration, with one exception. If you're using DEET to protect kids in an area known for ticks carrying Lyme disease or Zika outbreaks, a concentration of 20% to 30% may be appropriate.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
So,
I mean, I've had to work in the woods, you know, in the summer before, and more percentage not equaling more effectiveness.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I can't necessarily say this, but you know, we ended up using like your DEET for not intended for use on skin. You know, it was designed for tents. You know, you spray it on your tent.
Uh-huh.
So it was well above 30. And it still didn't work. So, I mean, you don't know how many mosquitoes didn't bite you, but I can tell right. you a lot of mosquitoes did bite us.
Yeah.
But that's interesting that, you know, I'm glad to know that I'm not going to die of cancer because I did that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, because, I mean, it was just, it's what you had to do. It was either get eaten alive or soak yourself in DEET.
Yeah.
And chose to soak myself in DEET. So
yeah, so I guess along those lines,
relatively safe.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at the page where I pulled that information from, and here's another thing that they cite. In 1998, after reviewing case reports of seizures, the EPA concluded that the rate of adverse reactions appeared to be very low, on the order of 1 per 100 million persons. The agency instructed manufacturers to provide additional instructions for minimizing overexposure to DEET. It authorized DEET for use by children, but banned marketing claims that DEET products are, quote, safe for children. The EPA said it had, quote, no evidence that would lead it to believe that DEET is uniquely toxic to infants and or children, end quote. But it added that its its personnel still had, quote, concerns regarding these seizures, especially for children who are more susceptible to seizures in general and who receive a higher dose of DEET due to a greater surface area to body weight ratio, end quote. So, while there is some concerns, it's not nearly as scary, I guess, as, you know, maybe it's made out to be. It's sort of my right. takeaway. I mean, like I said at the beginning, it's like, oh, DEET, yeah, don't be spraying that on your kids, you know.
Yeah, it definitely gets a bad rap. I mean, there's a lot of, I don't know what you want to call them, products on the market that are basically specifically targeted to, you know, because DEET's bad.
Yes, that's
specifically
a good...
targeted, especially to mothers.
Yes,
you know, for their children, because DEET's a big villain.
Yes, yes, yeah, that's right. There's a lot of marketing dollars on stuff that contains no DEET, DEET free. You know, I want to pause here briefly and talk about our sponsor, Monster Whitetail Grub. So if you're looking for deer feed or deer mineral, things to attract deer to your camera location, your stand location, your property in general, check out Monster Whitetail Grub. They have their signature Monster Whitetail Grub feed. It's a high protein feed. It's got mineral mixed in, so they keep coming back even after the physical feed is gone. They've got flavored corn, which turns regular corn into more of a long range attractant. And they've also got just your straight powdered mineral. So lots of options there, and it's all really high quality stuff. So check them out, Monster Whitetail Grub. Go to ohiohuntsman.com/sponsors, and you'll find a link there on how to get in touch with them and how to get their product. It may be in a retail location near you. They're getting in more and more retail locations. So check them out, Monster Whitetail Grub. I guess another data point here, we mentioned the Canadian government's recommendations. They include a table here. So Health Canada recommendations for DEET usage, 0 to 6 months, Health Canada says no DEET. 6 to 24 months, use only when bug risks are high, and use a 5 to 10% DEET product and limit to one application per day. 2 to 12 years, they say 5 to 10% DEET, limit to 3 applications per day, and avoid prolonged use. And then general population, no more than 30% DEET allowed in products, which we said that the Canadian government, they don't sell anything in Canada over 30% DEET. So that's DEET. Any other questions, anecdotal info, anything we didn't cover on DEET?
Other than my anecdotal info is that DEET, you know, I mean, when you get in the thick, I can't speak to how it affects ticks. But when you get into DEET mosquito areas, it doesn't seem to be enough, no matter how, you know, well, and you just said that the increasing the concentration doesn't really increase how effective it is. But I've definitely basically had my skin still be wet from spraying it with DEET bug spray and had mosquitoes land on me and bite me.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so even aside from the potential, albeit small, health implications, DEET does have other, you know, negative side effects probably isn't. It has other cons in that, you know, kind of stinks, and the fact that it can damage plastics and vinyls and things like that. So, which, you know, a lot of your outdoors, you know, tent materials, you know, sunglasses, you know, all of that stuff they list on here is it has a potential to damage that type of product. So mm-hmm. Then I guess we'll go to Picaridin. And I'm not sure if it's Picaridin or Picaridin. Don't know. But this one was a a relatively new one to me. I hadn't really heard much about this until I started looking into this. So basically, from the National Pesticide Information Center, picaridin repels insects, ticks, and chiggers. It is a synthetic compound first made in the 1980s. It was made to resemble the natural compound peperin, which is found in the group of plants that are used to produce black pepper. Picaridin has been widely used as an insect repellent in Europe and Australia, but has only been available in the United States since 2005. So typically, I don't know about Australia, but I know Europe tends to be more strict on like public health safety kind of stuff. You know, they're mm-hmm. they want more warnings on things. They, you know, so take that for what it's worth, I guess. Now, this information comes from EWG. They say picaridin, developed by Bayer AG in the 1980s and sold in the U.S. since 2005, has very low inhalation toxicity, is not known to irritate skin, and does not have a pungent odor like DEET. It evaporates from the skin more slowly than DEET or IR3535 and may repel bugs for longer periods. So we haven't got to IR3535, but that's the next one in the list. So with regards to efficacy, they say in efficacy testing, picaridin performs like DEET, appearing to repel a wide range of pests. A 2018 science review comparing the mosquito repellency of DEET with picaridin considered more than 140 field and laboratory studies and found no significant difference in performance. EPA registration data indicates that picaridin at a concentration of 20% is effective against mosquitoes and ticks for 8 to 14 hours, and at a concentration of 10% is effective for 5 to 12 hours. Picaridin does not carry the same neurotoxicity concerns as DEET, but has not been used as extensively by people. Overall, EWG's assessment is that picaridin is a good alternative to DEET, with many of the same advantages and without the same disadvantages. So the strong odor, the, you know, damage, potential damage to plastics. Mm-hmm. So they summarize for both adults and children, EWG recommends picaridin products as a safe and effective tick prevention at 20% concentration, products that are at 20% concentration.
And is so, that... is there products readily available on the market with this chemical?
Yes. It's not as common as DEET. DEET is still like right. When you go in the bug spray aisle, you're mostly going to see DEET. But I just right. went to Walmart and bought a can of, I think it's off brand, but it, you know, it says on the front of it, instead of, you know, with DEET, it says picaridin.
Okay, that's interesting, because, yeah, I was about to say, like, you know, yeah, basically when I go to buy bug spray, I buy off-brand bug spray, you know,
yeah.
DEET, you know. So, it's interesting that off, you know, has an option.
Yeah, I mean, when you go to any of the bug spray, you know, manufacturer websites, you know, off, I just bought a can of off. I think it was off. I think Cutter has a picaridin. Sawyer, which we talked about before, they do the permethrin, you know, clothing and equipment tick spray. They also have a you know, a line of like bug repellents, and they say they sell picaridin repellents. The brands that you're, you know, familiar with do offer a picaridin based repellent. Like I said, they, you know, you may only have one or two options in the bug spray aisle with picaridin, at least at this point, whereas you're going to have 50 options for DEET. But they are out there. So we're actually planning another family trip to the cabin this weekend. When we were there last time, we didn't spray. We were down there for a family/turkey trip, right? And we didn't spray anything on Ella. and she ended up with, you know, a handful of ticks on her. We're going to try, you know, because according to this, there seems to be fewer concerns, you know, neurological things or whatnot with picaridin based bug repellents. So we're going to try that this time and see how she does, see how we do, I guess, with the getting ticks on us. So we'll have our own little anecdotal test, I guess. But then last but not least, that takes us to IR3535, which, I don't know, they need a better, I don't know, with a name like IR3535, it seems like, you know, I don't know.
Sounds like Agent Orange.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like, it's a very chemical, like, yeah, they need a brand name for it, for sure, yeah. Because, yeah, it sounds bad.
Yeah. So, again, EWG, they give a little background on this stuff. So, I can try to pronounce the full chemical name, which they say is 3N-butyl-N-acetyl-aminopropionic acid ethyl ester. That's a mouthful. That is structurally similar to the naturally occurring amino acid B-alanine. Merck and co. developed IR3535 in the mid-1970s and has been used in Europe for more than 20 years, but was not registered for use in the U.S. until 1999. So they say IR3535 can be very irritating to the eyes, but poses few other safety risks. European authorities have received no reports of health problems caused by this chemical. Like DEET, IR3535 may dissolve or damage plastics. The manufacturer recommends avoiding contact with plastics other than polyethylene and polypropylene. So you got that same, one of those same cons as DEET, where, you know, it can be damaging to plastics. So they talk about, now this is interesting, talking about efficacy. A comprehensive review of public efficacy studies completed between 2000 and 2013 found the performance of IR3535 to be similar or slightly less effective than DEET and picaridin against mosquitoes. However, against deer ticks, IR3535 provided over twice the mean protection time of DEET, picaridin, or oil of lemon eucalyptus. So, there again, right? You gotta choose what's right for you, right? So, what is slightly less effective than DEET or picaridin against mosquitoes, but it sounds like possibly more effective. And I don't know, maybe because the way they word that is probably important. Twice the mean protection time of DEET, picaridin, or oil of lemon eucalyptus. So, I don't know that saying it's more effective than the other products, but it certainly does seem that it lasts longer, gives you longer protection. So I guess maybe in a way is more effective.
Right.
In the beginning, I mentioned there's some other products. Oil of lemon eucalyptus is another one. I couldn't find as much information on that. I will note that oil of lemon eucalyptus is different. It's not lemon eucalyptus essential oil. It is a different thing altogether. So don't you know, think you're going to get lemon eucalyptus essential oils and use it as a tick repellent. The stuff I did find on it, they were very clear to point out that oil of lemon eucalyptus is a different thing than lemon eucalyptus essential oil. It's different, so whatever that means. Mm-hmm. The other interesting thing about this stuff is, for whatever reason, they say that the chemical is most often found in products sold as sunscreens and repellents. So it's like a combo product, a sunscreen with a bug repellent mixed in.
Okay.
And EWG recommends avoiding these products because sunscreen should be reapplied every 2 hours, but following those instructions would overexpose the user to the bug repellent. So Now, this stuff, I don't know, you're not going to walk into your, you're not necessarily going to walk into your Walmart and find this stuff. Now, I did find, I think some of the, there's some, like the Avon Expedition line of bug repellents. They do have some with this IR3535 as the active ingredient. So it, you know, it can be found, it can be ordered, but I would say probably far less common than DEET, or certainly DEET, but even probably picaridin. And I guess permethrin. I mean, you can walk into Walmart and buy Sawyer brand permethrin or whatever, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Now, is that in like the hunt or like the camping section, or where do you even find that?
The permethrin?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think it's in the, it's not with the, like your other seasonal bug spray aisle.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's in like the camping, in that section there.
Yeah, because I was looking here, you know, because the only product I've ever used to keep ticks off of me is just regular bug spray off. And then my wife purchased the product called Bug Off. I just had to go grab it. And I think it's kind of one of those more, I don't know, I don't want to say hippie products, but it's a natural product. It literally has no ingredients on it. I went to their website. Doesn't tell you what's in it. It just says... says chemical free, family safe, bug repellent.
Yeah, see, so. And a lot of that stuff, if they're not telling you what's in it, you know, how are you to know? If you just, I guess you just have to trust the marketing.
Yeah, because yeah, I just have to assume that there's nothing dangerous in here, I guess. Yeah.
Well, and you know, trust that it's effective, right? Like right. If you're spraying this stuff on, because that was some of the other stuff that I had read is, you know, you got to be a little bit leery of some of these all natural products in that they may be giving you a false sense of security, right? Like, oh, I got this stuff on, I'm safe, you know, and so maybe you're not as diligent about checking for ticks at the end of the night because, well, I had my, you know, my all natural bug repellent on, and you know, then you end up getting Lyme disease because you didn't check, or, you know, so.
Yeah. One thing I can say about this product is I've never gotten a tick on me when I've used it. And when I was at the cabin, I had, you know, I was pulling ticks off of me left and right. You know, I was obviously walking around somewhere where I was getting ticks, and my wife got fed up with it, went in, grabbed this product, put it on me, and I didn't get another tick. So it might work.
Yeah.
Might not. I don't know.
Yeah.
But
yeah, I mean,
so far so good, I guess.
Right. And that brings up another, you know, with permethrin, right? Like you treat your clothes. Well, you know, we're coming into summer here. You know, you go fishing, you're standing on a whatever lake bank, creek bank, whatever, in shorts, right? A lot of times. Or, you know, you're just out with your family, you go on a hike or something, you know, you're in shorts. You can't, so your legs are exposed. You can't put,
right?
You know, the other thing I guess to circle back, I just thought about for permethrin is right on the bottle, they say basically they only want you treating your outer layers. Like they don't, they said don't treat your, like your underwear or your undergarments, if you will. They don't want it up against your skin, I guess. Mm-hmm. Which you would think those would maybe be the, if it were safe, and it's probably just out of an abundance of caution, but if it were safe to be on your skin, no, you know, no potential health risks there, that, you know, because a tick on my pants, you know, I'm not so much concerned about that. It's when it gets under my pants or under my shirt, you know, that last layer, that would be the layer you would think you would want to have treated with a product like that.
Right.
But, you know, they say specifically on the bottle to not treat, you know, although they do say that it's okay to treat your socks. They recommend treating your socks.
Interesting. But not
like underwear or undergarments. So, yeah.
Well, that's the only place I've ever had a tick attach, you know, good, was in between my toes. So,
yeah.
Got to treat those socks. Yeah. That's a good place. Also, when you're checking yourself for ticks, make sure you check in between your toes.
Well, so funny story, right? You because you told us about that, like, oh man, I had this tick. It was between my toes, you know?
Uh-huh.
So now, I don't know how many times I've looked down and saw something black, you know? And I'm like, oh crap, I got a tick, you know? And you get down there and it's just black sock lint, you know? So I've yet right. to have a tick between my toes, but after you told us that, I've had a more than a couple, you know, little panic attacks, like, oh crap, there's a tick. Or like you're in the shower yeah. or something, you know, and you look down and there's something black on the floor of the shower, and you know, you're like, oh, is that a tick? No, it's just a right. sock lint that washed out from between my toes, you know.
Right, especially in the shower when you're, you know, a glasses wearer, you yeah. know what's going on yeah. the shower floor.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
It could be a tick. It could be sock lint. Could be a spider for all I know. Just looks yeah. like a black and blob down there.
Yeah. And I mean, I let that tick get big because it's not that I didn't notice that there was something there. I just thought I had sock lint in between my toes. You know, I remember being at work that day and like, oh, you know, something. You know, I got like sock lint in between my toes.
Oh, you can feel it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, and thinking like, oh, you know, I need to, you know, take off my shoe and fix that. But it's not appropriate to take off my shoe at my desk. Right, you right. know. And then, you know, I kind of forgot about it. And then, you know, hours later, I'm at home and take off, you know, my shoes, take off my sock and, you know, go to. You know, like, oh, you know, I still have that lint there, and go to, you know, swipe in between my toe and realize, oh, wow, there's a tick there and it's pretty engorged.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, so that was all bad. You know, that was a new hiding spot.
Yeah.
Because there's, I mean, most of the time, there's not many places on your body where a tick can attach and really let itself grow without you noticing it.
Yeah.
You know, I did have a tick. It didn't attach well, but I had a tick attach right in the middle of my back where I couldn't reach.
Oh.
This year. And, I mean, I had an itch and like I you know, I could barely reach there and I felt like, you know, a little like I could kind of move it a little bit, but there was no way I could get it off myself.
Right.
I had to have my wife take it off and she said basically as soon as she grabbed it with the tweezers, it was, you know, it just came off.
Yeah.
Like she didn't have to actually pull or anything. It just kind of came right off.
Yeah, so that's basically a long summary of the research I did on tick prevention, you know, biting bug prevention for, you know, the family, I guess, this year, and figured it would be worth sharing with everybody. So I guess I don't know where to go with that. I guess I'll say if you've had I think we've all probably used DEET at this point. But if you've used any of these other products or if you have something that we didn't talk about that you swear by works for ticks, I would certainly be interested to hear that as well, you know, and always looking for stuff that works well in that regard. And like I said, there's also this element of, should I be spraying this on my kid sort of thing? So, all right, that's it for this week. Hopefully you found some helpful information in there. Like I said in the beginning, I don't think there's a one size fits all answer to this problem. It's very situational. And so you've got to gather the information and make the best decision for you and your family for that situation. So hopefully that this helped you gather some of that information and helps you make an informed decision. If you have any questions on where I found any of this information, or any information on your tick prevention regimen or protocol, whatever you use, I'd love to hear that. Hit us up on Facebook or Instagram. We're Ohio Huntsman on Facebook, Ohio Huntsman_podcast on Instagram. And let us know. And with that, I'll let you all go, and we'll talk to you next week. Thanks for listening.